Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, this is a smashing chat. I got to sit down with Jack Besant of Reef. And Jack's just released his a solo record, and we speak about that. We speak about surfing and skating, and we speak about like what it was like to be in Reef and play Top of the Pops and two of these huge venues, and what it was like to be in the thick of the, you know, the big boom in the Brit music scene of the mid-90s and such. And that's just, you know, that's not even the bones of it. The bones of it is obviously all the records that have soundtracked Jack's creative journey to date. And it's a wonderful chat. He's such a smashing guy. And you're going to love it. Before we get on with it, just a big thanks to Scroobius Pip and my brothers and sisters at the Distraction Pieces Network. Much love to 76 for producing this podcast. And if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, when you've finished listening to my chat with Jack, then go and have a look in the archives, because there's 170-odd episodes with some of your favourite musicians, actors, comedians, producers, DJs. Go and have a little sort of rummage around in the archives, and I guarantee you'll find something that will tickle your fancy. So go and have a look at that. And if you really enjoy the podcast and would like to support it, I do have a Patreon page where you can then access another 100 or so episodes, and I put up weekly radio shows on there and video content and loads of other stuff and upfront episodes. And yeah, you can find out about all of this and merch and stuff like that at www.offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Right, let's get back to business. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Jack Besant. Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor, Eggfried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Eggfried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we're recording. Sitting opposite me via the means of Zoom is Jack Besant. Hello.
Yeah, how you doing, Stuart? All right. Yeah, hello, everyone.
I'm good, mate. Thank you. And yeah, what have you been up to? What's been going on?
Well, I've just been doing what I love doing, really. Obviously, it's a bit of a weird time with the COVID and stuff, but I've just been doing what I've been love doing, man. I've got a lovely, beautiful family. I've just been doing music this week. Kind of did a little gig in the barn. I've had a good week, actually, man. Lush. We've got a new sort of surfing place up near us in Bristol, and that's just reopened. And I just went there on Monday for like, it's like an artificial wave. So went there on Monday and had to go on that. And then I had some friends come down and we did a little bit of a jam in the barn, a little mini gig. I've had a bit of a golden week, actually, I got to say. And and then today I've got somebody's mastering four new songs I recorded pretty much over lockdown, man, you know?
So I was going to say that. How have you found, aside from sort of like, you know, personally, how have you found it creatively, you know, not being able to gig? I mean, this summer, would there have been reef gigs and stuff like that planned? Would you have been doing festivals?
We did have reef gigs throughout the summer, Rocco. We had we had some lovely ones in the lineup. You know, we had one, we were going to Barcelona, and I was going to do a little gig in the daytime with, you know, with Lucky Mountain. But I guess it's really, you just hope, you know, be really positive and just hoping and putting positive vibes out there that if things are going to get, you know, hopefully back to where they were, or to at least to a place where everyone can enjoy music and being together again, can't they? It's been, you know, I guess for everyone, it was it still is in a way, but it was a scary time for a while, wasn't it? You know, we had no idea what was going on, and, you know, so I don't know. I just took the opportunity to just spend time with my family and at the same time, just work on some songs like I like doing anyway, you know. So, but yeah.
Wonderful.
It's good doing this, man. I prefer doing an interview when I can see a person's face. It's good. It's easier, isn't it, Stuart Rocker?
Do you know what? I've done a couple where, like, the internet connection's not been good. Because obviously, like, normally I do these in a studio or go to people's houses and just do it face-to-face. And obviously that's had to all be changed in the recent months, and but I've had a few where, like, they've been done like with no visual, and I find it quite strange. You know, I've got, you know, I'll roll with it, but it's nice if you can kind of see what
people are. I like the Zoom. The Zoom thing seems to work pretty well, doesn't it? So
massively.
Yeah, dude.
All right, well, let's talk records. Jack, number one song with the greatest ever intro.
Yeah, well, I put some thought into that this morning, and I just love the Curtis Mayfield. It says, "Don't worry, if there is a hell below, we're all going to go."
Oh, what a song.
I just love that song. I love the intro. Rockers!
Yeah.
So I won't go any further with all what he says, but it's just wicked. I love the build-up, you know? I love the energy of that song. When everything kicks in, the percussion is just lush, man, you know? So
Curtis knew his way around an intro, though, didn't he?
Yeah, dude, yeah.
I mean, just that kind of snare snap at the beginning to move on up, whether it's the bass line from I'm Your Pusher or fucking Superfly.
Yeah, lush, mate. Absolutely, like, we're blessed with that music, aren't we, really? So, that's what I've got to say, Chief. Yeah.
So, in regards to intros, I always ask musicians this question on the podcast. The way that you approach writing intros, whether it's with your music or with Reef, like, has that changed from if we look back towards the sort of, you know, the early to mid 90s when Reef were in the sort of formative years and stuff like that? And like, when you approached making music then, obviously, the way that people listened to music was far different then. There wasn't streaming and such. You know, it was Top of the Pops. It was, you know, radio, you know, trying to get playlists on radio and stuff. The way that you make music now and the way that you make music, has that changed over the last... It's a very long-winded question, this, Jack, but I just want to know the way that you approach songwriting. Has that changed as generally people's listening habits have changed over the years?
I don't know. I think with Reef's sort of, you know, early days of being in bands and stuff, you're obviously inspired by stuff you're hearing around you or stuff you're seeing, like on Top of the Pops, or, you know, like we did when I was getting into music when I was 15, 16, you had chart show and different programs. You could watch bands and stuff, and then you could listen to stuff on the radio, and, you know, you could buy your vinyls and stuff like that. But yeah, so just when you're early and you're starting as a band, you just don't really know what you're doing. You're rocking out together. And the songs kind of, they're born, aren't they, in that environment? You're all playing your own little bits. and you kind of have fun making an intro, don't you? Go, oh, I want to try that. Yeah, Wiki, let's try it. And you just sort of do that, don't you? And you know, and then I don't know, that's kind of what we did with Reef. And then we worked with Clive Martin. First of all, we were with Replenish. He was a really cool producer, and he just captured the spirit of who we were. And I don't think we even discussed intros too much. I think we had already had kind of pretty rocking songs and natural from, you know. But as you progress, I mean, we've been working with George Tekulis. He might say, guys, you need an intro for that. You know, you need to find something for that song, you know. So later on down the line, maybe you're writing and perhaps it does get a bit more, you're looking at it in a bit more of right, more like intro. And, you know, I guess when you're starting out, you don't even think about it. You're just rocking out as a young band, you know. And then later on, you kind of, you're crafting songs more.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of what I meant. You know, did the kind of, you know, and it sounds terribly muso, but did that kind of element of crafting your songwriting? It's a natural thing to do as a band matures, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you get experience, don't you? You get experience by hanging out with people. I mean, like we're hanging out with George Tekulis. I mean, Clive Barn was amazing, and then on to George Tekulis. You're hanging out with this dude. You know, we've become friends, and he's just an amazing guy. And yeah, you get inspired by people, and you just pick up vibes that you know, and you learn from hanging out with these people. So for example, on this Lucky Mountain album, I've got that song called Peacemaker, and in a way I'm listening to stuff like Curtis Mayfield and stuff like that, you know what I mean? And I'm just listening to loads of different types of music. But that one, that intro of that song kind of showed itself. I've got a great guitar player I work with called Specs, and he just came down to the barn and I just put it on record and he just shredded out this riff. He wasn't even realizing he was on record. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I knew that I just pressed record because he's just rad, you know, when he's not thinking about things, he's rad. You know what I mean? So we just, you know, and then the intro kind of built to Peacemaker. That song on Lucky Mountain, I really like that intro. And then I got the harmonicas coming in and out. And then that built really nicely, brother. So I kind of, in a way, that crafted itself, but then there was a little bit of magic happening as well, that it sort of showed itself through crafting and magic.
It's a cool video as well, man.
Oh, thank you, Stuart Rocker. Yeah, that's I've had a couple of people say that, and I'm pleased. It's like kind of lo-fi,
yeah,
you know, and it's just some footage that a friend called Eric Davis, who lives in North Devon, he went on a trip to the Himalayas when he was about 22 with about 10 friends, and they all had like load of Land Rovers, and they had just filmed it on the Super 8s all the way through different countries. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that actual film was 40 minutes long. And I asked him, would you mind if I just, you know, did an edit to Peacemaker with the amazing footage? Because I love all the colors, the color palette. Isn't it beautiful, the color palette? And it all kind of played in with my album colors, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the palettes that I like. And I've been to the Himalayas, and I've taken my acoustic guitar there, and I've played and sung there, and I have a real connection with it. So it was really amazing. He said, yes, you can use it. And it just worked out wicked, Stuart, man, you know? And it didn't cost me like tons of money, because you've got to be careful, don't you? You're doing stuff, and, you know, and it's really good because I surf with this guy a lot, with Eric, who went on this trip. He's, you know, I don't know how much older than me he is, but he's got super stoked for surfing still now, you know? I go surfing when he's like, it's like when we used to go back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, he's crazy for it, and he's just lovely to hang out with. So that's really cool, you know. So yeah, no, thank you, man. Well, no, it's lovely. There's a lovely person called Demi Taylor who does the London Surf Film Festival. So she edited it for me to make it sort of the length of Peacemaker. Do you know what I mean? And she does a lot of stuff with surf films and all that. So she took the song and Eric's imagery and just did a really cool little edit for me. To try and make it a bit more concise for the song or give the song a bit of an ambiguous feel, you know? Yeah,
it works.
There's that guy who's got the mask on, hasn't he? You know?
I'll put the link to it on the bio for this podcast so people can click through and go and watch it, because it's a cool video and it's got that real nice kind of lo-fi warmth to it as well. It's good.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was hoping would happen. And like what's happening right now is just lovely feedback about stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? And you just don't know who's. There's so much traffic out there, isn't it? With people putting their music out there, which is amazing. You never know how if your stuff's going to get heard or seen. Yeah. You know, you just have to let go a little bit. So anything I'm hearing right now, I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Thank you. You know. So yeah.
Wonderful. Well, for track two, Jack, I'm going to ask you the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, there's the Songbird song by Fleetwood Mac, mm-hmm. you know, and just beautiful, like, you know, just as, again, you know, 15, 16, 17, I can remember, sort of just hearing something like that. And I know it's, I kind of grew up on rock music and kind of metal and stuff, really, and then heavy funk and stuff. But then you've got this beautiful song that comes along that, you know, just sort of touches me in a very human way, I think. Do you know what I mean? A human, heartfelt way, I guess.
What would the emotion be, Jack?
Just loving someone or loving someone so much and yeah. caring for them and that. I just, you know, and yeah, it's just beautiful.
Lovely.
I don't know, man, yeah.
So where was that? Where would you have heard that? Where was home then?
Well, growing up in Somerset, and that was possibly, I heard that song through a first love of being with somebody, do you know what I mean? And just, I don't know, them giving me a playlist or something, and I think it's on that, do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
and I don't think that, you know, necessarily, bless her, she lost her mum really young, her mum really young from cancer, so I think it's more to do with that, as well as, you know, a relationship with somebody. It's more like, you know, that was the time things were happening, do you know what I mean?
And
it's in a way that, and around that time I lost my brother around that time as well, so there's that those lyrics really hit a spot, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, so that's that one, Rocker.
Okay, well, for track three, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, Jack.
Well, yeah, when I was when I first got into music, and almost like I had my parents, when I was growing up, my parents didn't really listen to like loads of music.
There was nothing on at home, like there weren't a stereo.
Not a loads, Chief, mate. Maybe a bit of Tina Turner, which, you know, which is cool, and bits and bobs that my mum used to play. My dad never really played much music. Maybe just a few things like comedy things. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? But I got into music at 14, not long after I started playing bass, but I got in straight away into sort of the metal scene, like Iron Maiden and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Actually, the first record I bought was Iron Maiden Killers.
Nice.
So I was sort of just getting into that whole like spirit of like metal, and I love the artwork on that album as well. And I used to sort of look at that artwork and, you know, just go around with my Walkman listening to like Wrathchild and Killers, and just getting really into the spirit of that kind of music, really. And it just took me.
I totally get that as well, because it's like, I mean, you know, Maiden are Maiden, and there's a reason that, you know, this, you know, one of the biggest bands in the world for a long time, and probably still play huge venues wherever they play. But it wasn't just that. I remember, like, the just, you know, I don't know if branding was a big thing back then, but the branding that Iron Maiden had on all their covers, whether it was Eddie on there or whatever, it was like, it was so eye-catching, wasn't it? And as a kid, it was like, wow, what's this? It was like a horror film, like on a record sleeve. It was like, and you just get stuck straight into it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I can remember just like, I still go now, but like, I remember sort of 14, you were allowed to go out, you know, and skateboard the streets a little bit, you know, and you've got your Walkman, and you just get into this sound, do you know what I mean? And it's just, and his bass lines, sorry, pump lines, his bass lines, it was just like wicked. And everything's a little bit punky, wasn't it? Especially with the first singer, dude. Yeah. I mean, I love Bruce Dickinson as well, but it was all that quite kind of punk kind of, you know, it's good. Like, and that clever, you know? So I enjoyed, that's definitely my sort of school days of that sort of vibe, really.
So how was school? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did enjoy it. Yeah, sort of enjoyed it, Roger. I was obviously working on a farm a lot, do you know what I mean? And I was a farmer and going to school. And like, I liked art. We didn't have a great art teacher, which some I look back on a little bit and go, oh, that's a shame, you know what I mean?
Was you a creative kid then?
Yeah, I think I was a bit more hands-on than, I liked a bit of English and stuff and, you know, bits and bobs and, I like reading and things, but yeah, no, I enjoyed school, man. I got on all right with it, you know. Sport, I like sport as well, and bits and bobs, mate. So,
So, with the sort of, you say you sort of started playing bass. Was that something that come through school, or was that just through sort of circle of mates? And
through school and circle of mates. I was in with some sort of gang at school, and then one day it was my turn not to be the cool one or something. And I remember going, I'm not into this. I don't like this sort of. I never have liked that whole sort of alpha male or that on-site band. Even it starts at school, doesn't it? And I'm like, no, I'm not into that. I just go off and skate or play my bass or something. I'm not into sort of picking on people. And I remember just leaving that gang and then hanging out with these other guys who are perhaps a bit more artistic or whatever. Like it is at school. It's all like kind of groups and stuff, isn't it? And they were much more into sort of like music and heavy metal and that. And then it's what I had a good friend actually. I saw him for the first time for 20 years, like last year when Reef played in Pembrokeshire. And we're a real nice guy, actually. We just lost contact. But we started a band together. He was into metal. He got me into metal, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He played guitar. I played bass, you know? And we just used to hang out together. And I loved it. And I think around about 14, when I had something like that to get into, I really enjoyed having something to get into, especially with my hands and, you know, playing bass. And then I try and sing a little bit. And my brother go, oh, you can't sing your shit. You know what I mean? And all that stuff you go
That's
through.
What brothers do, though, right?
Yeah, rocker, man. So, so I had a whole time. And then at the same time, I loved art as well. But, you know, it didn't have the great teaching. But your life's your life, aren't you? You can't look back and go, I wish, you know, because your life's your life. And so, those are the things that I felt good about. And you know, you can see, like I say, so I'm digging art. I'm digging the album covers. I'm digging the feeling it gives me, you know. And then from then on, you sort of move and you meet other people, and they say, oh, check out the Chili Peppers, check out Fishbone, so what's Fit? Then you've Parliament and other things, you know what I mean? So that's the way it evolved, really.
So when was that? Was that kind of like early 90s when you had that surgence of like the Peppers and Fishbone? And
yeah, so initially Maiden and stuff like that, do you know what I mean? And then moving on from that, like I didn't even know what a bass line was, mate, when I listened to Iron Maiden. I had no idea what, you know, it's so new. So you learn a bass line and you learn what, oh, guitars, bass, okay, yeah, drums. Didn't know anything about any of it, really. And then when I went to college, when I met Gary, you know, we met very early on. And we were listening to stuff like Jane's Addiction and, you know what I mean? Fishbone and
honestly,
Massive Attack as well came on board. Oh. You know, that whole sort of like just songwriting, really. Yeah. We got into songwriting, you know, and sounds and stuff, you know. And
it's so crazy, Jack, how many people, when we start talking about formative years of like their bands and stuff like that, reference Jane's Addiction. Like, so many people will say, like, Ritual, like that was the album, man. It, like, you know, and you know, it's just and again, obviously, you know, the bass lines, you know, would you deconstruct songs when you was listening to them?
Not necessarily. I think it's the energy of the band more than anything that sort of time, you know, the energy of, like, you know, coming down the mountain.
So good.
It's that bass line, doesn't it? It's just that's the stuff that I thought was rad. And one of our best gigs, me and Gary went to London and we stayed with our friend's mum. And we had a really nice time. You know, we didn't go to London that much that sort of time, you know. We were 16 and we went to watch Fishbone at Astoria.
Nice.
And it's one of the best gigs I've seen, to be honest, till this day, you know. Like, they were just radical.
Yeah.
You know, and the crowd was amazing. You couldn't believe it.
I remember a story. I don't know if it's true, but I don't know if you've ever heard this, but I heard that one member of Fishbone, like, this would have been like early 90s, got kind of caught up in some weird cult.
Wow.
And like, and they literally locked him down in some kind of weird place. And like Scooby-Doo style, like the rest of Fishbone, like, broke in and bust him out and kind of like released him from this weird cult type thing that he was tied up in. I don't know how much truth is in that, but it sticks in my head.
Make a good promo video, wouldn't it?
Imagine. okay. Well, for track four, I mean, you touched on one of the first records you owned was Maiden. Was that the first record you remember going to like a record shop and buying yourself?
Yeah, that's it. I went and bought Killers. Yeah.
So was that, where, can you remember where you got it?
When I got it.
Where you got it.
Where, yeah, basically we had a newsagent in Cheddar and they had a few records in there and I just remember going to get it from there, really.
Yeah. It's so mad that like, whenever I ask people that on this podcast, the places that you used to be able to get records is so nuts that, like, you know, most of my records I bought from a newsagent and it's like when I was growing up and like the amount of people that go, oh yeah, Woolworths. Or like, yeah, Boots, yeah. WH Smiths. Yeah. It was like, oh yeah, they all had like record departments. And it's
they did. I mean, I didn't really remember that. But yeah, we had like a little newsagent with a little record department in the corner. That's right. What we had in Cheddarheader, man.
Yeah. My one had this like kind of like turnstile. And it basically, it never sold anything that was in the top 40. But if you went there, you'd get something that was in the top 40 about a month later. And they'd had the middles missing where they'd been like ex-jukebox. So they had to, like the centre of the like the vinyl pushed out. But you'd go and get something like for 75p or whatever that was, you know, that was a hit like a month ago. So you literally just would trawl through that when I was like a little teenager,
We've gone backwards, haven't we? Like, if we used to be able to go and get vinyl from our local newsagents, we've gone backwards, haven't we? We can't do that now. It should be as funky as that, shouldn't it? I'm just going to go and get a few records down the local village shop. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I say that. Like, I went to one of the big Tesco superstores near where I live, and they've got a vinyl section in there now.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, I thought, that's insane. And like, and if you walk past like a HMV now, they've got like more vinyl than CDs now, which is...
I mean, yeah, there's a lovely... in Bridport, there's a place called Clockwork Towers. And I was only there just randomly because we're getting a new exhaust pipe on a van. I had to be there all day long. So I took a little adventure around Bridport. Most wicked vinyl store there. I might do a little in-store there actually at some point. It's a cool little town. I don't know if you know Bridport.
No, I don't think I've been there.
Yeah, it's a cool little town, mate. There's a little bit of a vibe going on there, a little bit like Camden Market kind of feel.
Yeah.
But then there's a great record store there, mate. So that, yeah, you know, it's good to go in record stores like that. They're kind of slightly intimidating, aren't they? But I just started chatting to the guy in there, and he was really cool.
Yeah.
Because they were doing fundraising for their local skate park, and that's what we've been doing that here. And I just went, oh, man, you're doing what we're doing in Cheddar. And then we just got chatting. You know, because I do find it intimidating sometimes, the record stores like that, when you got the nerdy boss who's running it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all a bit quiet in there, and there's great, cool music pumping. And in that one, there's so much great artwork all around. So you're kind of surrounded by all this iconic artwork, and you're like, whoa, it really puts you like, whoa.
Yeah, it is that whole high fidelity, we're not worthy kind of thing, isn't it? Of just like, I daren't ask what they're playing. Just like, don't you know? You should know this.
Like, I know, it was flattering. But this guy was, I think it's Roy, his name was. He was super cool in there, actually. And then we just hit it off, you know? So I can't wait to go and play there, you know?
Yeah.
So I think we can now with some of the... I think we can actually do little gigs and stuff now. So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry. It won't take a sec. All I want to say is the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up and get back to the podcast.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Podcast. See you on the other side. You've mentioned skating quite a lot. And how important was that for you in the kind of sort of, you know, early 90s and stuff and up to date? You know, do you still skate?
Yeah, I do. I love it. Hmm. Yeah, it was really, I mean, it's been great because when you're touring and all that sort of stuff, I mean, like I say, you know, that thing of just taking yourself off out and going around the streets and that and just finding a bit of your own peace and having a bit of a rock out. And then when you're touring, there's so much time on your hands, you know? So it's great. Services, shit, what do I do? I've been on the bus for 5 hours. Get my skateboard out, you know, and have a skate around or even in, you know, like, there's loads of skate parks in every city. So it just gives you something to do. Well, let's just get off the tour bus.
Yeah.
Just get out of the funk a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's been brilliant, actually. It's been, you know, I really love it. And now we've, you know, I've got two boys and they're amazing. And like when Duke, my oldest was eight, I really want to build a ramp on, because we've got a bit of room on the farm, build like a half pipe. Do you know what I mean? Nice. So I did that when he was eight, he's 10 now. So and we've all been using it and that's really good fun, man. So almost like, because I didn't really have a ramp near me when I was younger, kind of making up for that a little bit. Yeah. But actually, it's not like a sort of midlife crisis or whatever. I'm beyond midlife now, brother. But it's like, it's almost like taking on something and learning a new skill and loving it, you know, like half pipe skating. I'm loving it. You know, it's why not take on something new in any age?
Totally.
Yeah. So I'm really enjoying that, man. There's so many like tricks to learn. I'm trying to take it. I don't want to do myself an injury wise, but you know, but it's great for surfing as well. You know, all these like turns and stuff on the ramp and the balance. So,
One of the things from the early 90s and skating as well that was definitely influential on my musical taste was so many of the skate videos would expose some great music that you'd never heard before. Was there skate VHSs being passed around like you and your mates?
Yeah, that's it. I bought a couple of skate. I know what you mean. You had the Search for Animal Chin, that sort of 80s.
All the Animal Chin stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool, wasn't it? But then in the 90s, it was the Zero Skate team. They had some good VHS videos that I bought. And that was a bit more punk, hardcore rock. But I was very inspired by that at the time.
Yeah.
Stuff that was really, you know. But then I do watch Bones Brigade documentary with my kids. And we watch that together, do you know what I mean? And that's just got great music on it and stuff. Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, I know what you mean. Like you say, quite often in skate films, they pick up music that's got interesting sounds and beats, haven't they? And it's just great with the visuals.
Yeah.
It's just a great way of listening to music, isn't it, with visuals? I really dig that.
Totally, totally.
Yeah,
it was
always
one of them things. It was like, you were blah, blah, blah. No, where'd you hear that? Oh, it was on that skate vid. And it was like, oh, right, yeah, can I borrow that? And like, and you just watch the skate vids and you'd literally just be waiting at the end. It was like, right, who done that song there? Like, you know, where can I get that? And it was like...
That's really cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I love doing stuff like that. I love to hook up with people who are doing skate films and surf films, really. I try and get involved with that sort of thing, and hopefully that will happen a bit more. I love that. Mm. But what I was going to say, Rocker, as well, is like we met the other day. Her name was Liz, and she sung Wishing Upon a Star, is it? Is it Fresh Four from Bristol?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course.
And those dudes in that video are skating, aren't they? And that's a little bit similar skating to the Animal Chin. That sort of 80s, not, you know, like it must be late 80s, is it? But their skate, that's actually a really cool video. When you watch that video now, because we met the singer, the girl who sung on it, and we just watched the video, or we watched it recently or something. That's right, we watched the Top of the Pops 2 or something, you know what I mean? And this song came on at that time. I think maybe it's 88, I'm not sure.
I reckon it was about 88. It was a time when every song that would come out seemed to have that beat.
Yeah,
it had that loop, didn't it?
That one shone out.
Yeah, it's a tune that is.
With the video as well. Yeah. You know, we watched the video because it came on the Top of the Pops, and it was like, oh man, that, and I've watched it again since. The dude's skating, it's a really cool style. Her voice is brilliant, but we just met her at a campsite recently, the singer, and I was just playing, I was jamming with Specs, the guitar player I play with, you know, I say Lucky Martin and Bits and Bob. We were just jamming around the cat bar, and she came and sung with us. It was really beautiful. So that's really cool. That's a really good song, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I also want to ask, like, you know, we've mentioned Top of the Pops, and as, you know, as most kids, we're pretty much the same age, Jack, and Top of the Pops was, you know, as young lads, like, Top of the Pops was the place, the only place really, and you mentioned the chart show, but Top of the Pops was the only place where you could actually sort of see your pop stars, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And like, so from being like someone, you know, and understanding how important Top of the Pops was, you know, to see your favourite bands and things like that, how was it to, I presume that Reef have played Top of the Pops plenty of times.
Yeah, we played it quite a few times, actually. Or mimed it, and then we did get the chance to play live on there. I know definitely once, maybe twice we played live. But, yeah, we mimed on there a few times. And
how was that, like the first time, knowing you was going to go on Top of the Pops?
I had a laugh because I think I'd seen a couple of performances on there of EMF played on there, didn't they? And they just completely cocked around. And then you had Nirvana on there. Did he throw his bass in the air? Did it land on his head or something?
Yeah, I think that was the MTV thing. But when
it was something, wasn't it?
When Kurt done it, he literally put the mic in his gob and was just making this. And I think when Lemonhead's done it, Evan Dando done something really fucking weird as well, or just didn't move his mouth when he was meant to be lipsy. I can't remember what it was.
But I've seen it. I mean, I just detuned all my strings, so they're like really floppy, and then I just I just had a laugh with it, you know. And when that was with Naked on the Replenish,
yeah.
So that was the first time we were on there. I think it was with Naked. It must have been, and that's what I did. I just detuned all my strings and just danced around like a nutter.
Well, you've come to my literally my hometown on that tour. We've never had bands like playing Basildon, and you came to the Tangate Theatre in Basildon on that tour, and I remember thinking like, oh, we're finally on the map. People are like going to start playing here now, and it was literally Reef, and then that was it. No one else ever come back after that. But we had a moment.
They were good fun those days, you know. Like I said, it was just raw, and we were young, and we just went around, just didn't know. We didn't know what we were doing, really, but we were doing it, you know. It's lush.
That's the exciting point, though, isn't it? It's like when you were saying, you know, when we first started chatting and you were saying about, you know, didn't really know about intros. It was like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Like, them moments, them early days of just getting to know what it's like trying to make a band, you know, get a song. They're the best times, right? It was like, because there's no real agenda. Like, you don't know any different. It's all to be played for, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyone out there who wants to have a crack at that, it's just such a laugh. It's such a great 100%. Thing to friends and people, isn't it? Just 100%. Get in a room, and I mean, that's the beauty of it. Like, you're so lucky when you're in a band because you're right in the sound. You know, anyone watching is great; they're out front. But if you were to walk on stage and just walk into the where everyone's playing, there's such a great sound there. I mean, I know the sound men and women or sound people try and make the sound out front the best they can, like it is on stage, but it's nothing like just walking in amongst it and being in a little huddle, you know. Totally. It's amazing, man. Yeah,
well, for track 5, I don't know when was I want to know what the song was that soundtracked your years clubbing.
Well, I was a rocker one night, so any, you know, I go to rock clubs really in Bristol and stuff like that, but you go to some, I mean, that's clubs and Bits and Bobs, and they'd play a few rock songs. And
this question obviously lends itself to you know, indie clubs, rock clubs, whatever. Like, it's not necessarily got to be them kind of high street chrome
covered,
like Dancing to Faithless. It can be like, you know, it could be anything. You can be throwing yourself around to Jane Says on the dance floor. Like,
well, that's it. I mean, that, you know, that, I mean, early on it was Ace of Spades, really. Mm. You know, that's the one that just kicked in and you're like, yeah, rockers, come on, let's do it. Let's get up there and have a rock out.
Yeah.
But like you're saying then, you know, then you had like Welcome to the Jungle or, you know, Jane Says, you know, those times where you just love it and you get up, wouldn't you, and just get amongst it, you know? So that's, I did write down Ace of Spades really, because that was just the one that was always playing. And we were just gribbly rockers growing up. That's what we liked.
I mean, that's a call of arms, that record, isn't it? Fucking hell, the minute it starts.
I love
just...
that Motorhead as well. Yeah. That's really...
Did you ever hear the JTQ cover of that? Like the sort of like the acid jazz or cover of Motorhead?
Of Motorhead. No, I'll have to listen to that.
Oh, mate, that's got a groove to it, that has. Oh, wonderful.
Who is that again? It's
James Taylor Quartet.
Oh, James, yeah, okay, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got a nice little groove to it.
Wicked, man. Thanks for that.
As a young lad, like, what did you want from clubbing, Jack?
What did I want from it? I don't know. I did enjoy, there was a really cool rock club in Bristol that I enjoyed going to. It not long got closed down, but it was like three levels. You had like soft rock, and then you had sort of grungy, and then you had like death metal. Which, how cool is that?
Yeah.
You just go from one level to the other.
You wouldn't get that nowadays, would you? Like, no, what a moment to have had that.
Yeah, it was great. And that, I really can't remember what the name of the club was. I wish I could at the minute in Bristol, but I went there a few times. Obviously, from Cheddar to get there was, you know, it was tricky. You know what I mean? But I really enjoyed that there. And that was good for me, man. I loved that. That was a right laugh when you're growing up. I loved being in that scene, that rock scene, you know?
Yeah.
Because I went to Donington Rocks Festival at 87 and 88 as well. So I got to see all these amazing bands.
Who was that? Was Maiden at one of them?
Maiden. Bon Jovi headlined at 87, I think. Maiden 88. But you had Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Anthrax. I was just trying to think. I was looking it up. You just had all these great bands. Davey Roth played as well.
Amazing.
So just introduced all these, like, you know, just really young, couldn't even drive, but went 2 years in a row and just loved that, you know. Yeah. So that was really cool. I know, I'm not saying it's not a club, is it? But
I mean,
that's cool, man. I love that scene, you know.
To be stuck in the crowd, you know, living it and being full of sort of energy and being young, and to then fast forward, you know, 8-9 years, and you're on the flip side of that, you're on the stages at these big festivals and there's thousands and thousands of people going mad to your records. Like, when that happened, you know, because, you know, when Reef exploded, you know, onto the, you know, to mainstream success, like, it was a very exciting time for British music, it felt like, you know, there was so much going on. And how did it feel and to be, you know, to have like a huge fan base that was, you know, going crazy to your records, and that in tow brings fame, and how did you find that?
I thought the process was pretty cool, because we had this. The reason why things sort of blew up on that first record with Naked is because we had that mini Discover, didn't we? Yeah. And like, kind of like, we were a bit wary about doing that, but the fact that we were in it, so we had our faces in it, and it was our song.
Yeah,
we felt that was pretty cool. So everything kind of blew up after that. You had all these people that were watching. Obviously, we all watched terrestrial telly then, didn't there? There wasn't really much unless you had lots of money, had Sky, but everyone was just, so you'd have this advert that was coming on all the time, and this advert was saying, these guys are into skating, these guys are into alternative music, a bit zeppy or whatever, you know. But even for us, that whole riff was a little bit inspired by Massive Attack. The whole, my bass lines were like, I was trying to get these pushing heavy bass lines and stuff. I mean, so it's all, from what we've already talked about, that song was already trying to touch upon those things. But it connected, didn't it? That whole thing connected. So suddenly we were playing from 10 people to actually playing to full clubs after that, and that was amazing. And I loved it. And because I've been to Donington and all that, I was digging the crowds, digging the kind of sweat, the mosh. I was just digging all that. I was loving it, you know? And and it just went so well. And then Place Your Hands came out, and then we were just playing some amazing gigs, you know, all around Britain. We were just playing amazing fun gigs with the crowd exploding. We had a good few years of doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and like at that time, you had other bands that were kind of Brit pop, didn't you? Yeah. It's hard. I don't really like pigeonholing the music and stuff, but there was.
That was the terminology that was thrown around, wasn't it?
And we were not, we were rockers. We weren't part of that. Although, I digged it and what those guys were doing, it's fine. But, you know, we were definitely more like gribbly rockers, bluesy kind of.
Definitely.
But that people connected with.
Yeah.
The surfers connected it with, the skaters connected it with, just people were treating us like it was a breath of fresh air. So that's really cool, you know, and I digged that. But you're saying in the context of fame.
I just wondered how you found, like, you know, especially like, you know, when Place Your Hands come out, it was, you know, it was like, you know, you guys are everywhere. Everybody, as I say, terrestrial TV, like, you know, TFI Friday, it was like, oh, it's Reef Boys again. And like, you know, like, how did you find that, you know, from walking down the street and people knowing who you are? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I don't know. We sort of dealt pretty well with it. I don't know, I'm speaking for myself, you know, because I think I just did grounding things. I love to go and surfing and that. It's nothing more grounding than getting in freezing cold water and catching some waves and getting yourself, you know, just feeling really surfed out and like, yeah, that's really, you know, I was just doing that all the way through, really. I was trying to, not even aware of what I was trying to do. I was just doing stuff that I loved at the same time.
Well, that'd keep you grounded in itself, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I tried to keep fairly fit for that kind of stuff. So if I ever did go surfing, I could have a good time and try and get out the back and catch a wave and get, you know, because it takes a lot of effort when you're surfing, really. So that almost like kept me sane, really, just trying to do a little bit of exercise on tour and skate a little bit and just do, you know, it's quite crazy on tour doing that, you know, and maybe the fame thing and all that and going around and, you know, and I just tried to be normal, really, not try to be normal, just sort of just did my best, man, you know, of like, mate, we had an amazing opportunity. And I just wish that kids can have that same opportunity as we had, you know, like with what's going on right now with the world and everything. You know, I just hope that kids can have the same opportunities, really, of playing music and being creative and, you know, so yeah.
Okay. Well, for track 6, I want to know a favourite song from an artist from your home county.
Well, I thought about this and then I love the Hymn of the Big Wheel by Massive Attack, because it's, and my friend Bruno who mixed Lucky Mountain and I work with him a lot, and Gary has worked with him as well. We've done stuff together with Gary and he's done stuff with Reef recently, but he remixed Massive Attack Blue Lines. So Bruno Ellingham who mixed Lucky Mountain, so I think he remixed it in 2012, and I've been listening to that recently because I've not long got Spotify. You know what I mean? I've enjoyed Spotify, and then I've listened to his mixes on that the other day, and I was like, "Oh, that sounds really cool." I love the Hymn of the Big Wheel.
It's an incredible record.
It's really cool. You know, it's got like, you know, when you're songwriting and music and stuff, but it just goes a little bit. It just goes into the subconscious world, that song, for some reason. It speaks for a bit of the world. You know, it's just. It's not just the band. It's a clever, isn't it? Songwriting and sound and samples and whatever they've used, you know, the guy's voice. It just throws it into a lovely place, you know?
Massively.
Okay.
Last track, Jack, and you can play DJ now. And a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Well, I never knew of it. But maybe people do, but it's a song by Lee Dorsey. It's everything I'm going to do going to be funky from now on.
Okay, I've not heard that.
You know, there's no, everything I do going to be funky from now on. Do you know what I mean? And I just love the spirit of that. and the words are really cool, but I just feel like I want to live by that, man. For, you know what I mean? Everything, because life seems to be, you know, it's precious, isn't it? We've got to look after the planet and everything, and we've all got to do things that are just got to be kind of right on right now. Do you know what I mean? Because it's
definitely
it's in it. We've got to just look after the planet, and I just love those words sum it up for me right now.
Yeah.
It's worth sticking on, man. If you can stick that song on now, it'll be a lovely way to end it.
I'll do that. And what I'll do, Jack, is I'll do a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast as well, so people can go and listen to all the songs that we've spoken about on the
podcast. That's really cool of you, Stuart, man. What a lovely vibe.
So, Jack, as we, you know, it does appear that there's light at the end of the tunnel for, you know, the situation that we've been finding ourselves in. And so as we do start to kind of come out of this, like, you know, what are you looking forward to? What's coming up? Obviously, the record's out. Like, what's going to be happening? You know, is there going to be more kind of, you know, shows that, you know, you stream from your barn and things like that? Is there going to be more kind of things like that?
Yeah, I guess I might do like a little guest invite, do a few little gigs in the barn, like invite some guests and stuff. And then, but I still want to put myself out there, really. So I'm going to find some interesting places to play as the, I don't know, whatever the parameters of what, who you can play in front of and how many and all that. It's kind of, I'm just going to go with the flow. How that, as that sorts itself out, I just go and play, you know, but and play with different musicians, really. And the thing with it, I've learned to play the songs really stripped back. So if I'm just camping with my family and we're surfing and touring, I can find cool places to play like that, or I can go out with more of a band. You know, that's the beauty of the songs and stuff and the approach. So I said, yeah, I'm just going to feel it. If anyone wants to follow what I'm doing, they can just follow me on the social media or whatever on my things, really. But I say with Reef, I guess with Reef, I would imagine that's going to be kicking into gear again next year, you know, and that's exciting. We've got an album we've written. We've been writing with Andy Taylor, who's the Duran Duran guitar.
I mean, I saw that, and I did think I better, you know, I should ask this. I'm sure over the years you obviously met lots of your heroes and things like that. You know, your musical heroes through tours, isn't it? But I mean, it's pretty cool when you've got one of Duran Duran playing guitar in your band, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, it's been really lovely getting to know him, and he's just a true rocker as well.
How did that come about?
It came about because he's done a solo record, and he asked Gary to sing a couple of songs on his solo record. So Andy sings himself, and he got Gary to come and sing on a couple of the rockers that are on there. So it came back through that, and then we played at Glastonbury recently on the Avalon stage, and we invited Andy up to sort of jam with us on a few songs. But he's a very good guitar player, man. He's just telling me how, you know, where he's from and how he's so grounded in rock music. Do you know what I mean? He played all the clubs when he was like 14, 15, actually playing guitar when he was like 15, 16, all these different covers and joining different bands. He's a real cool, like, shredder and, you know, and player.
Yeah.
So it's lovely to jam with him. And, you know, his roots are in like good heavy rock music, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, he's just, and from doing his music with Duran Duran, he's met so many like cool, like, is it Nile Rodgers and all those dudes? You know what I mean? He's picked up experience. Like I was saying to you earlier, I've picked up experience with certain people.
Yeah.
He's picked up experience with, like, recording funk albums, and there's 80s albums and the Power Station record he did. You know, he's worked with lots of interesting people, and he's obviously got knowledge and experience. But that's the amazing, he's got that. But at the same time, we just all connect on a songwriting way, you know? Again, I mean, this whole interview is kind of, it kind of goes around in a circle, because we connected in a way like you would when you were first starting a band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With him on board. It was just fresh energy. And it was the right energy. And he works really well with Jesse, who we've obviously got playing guitar with us, Jesse Wood. Gaz were on vocals. And then we had a drummer come in to record the record. And Luke Bullen. And he's been doing some stuff out and about. And he just worked in the same way. Just a really good drummer to work with, you know. So if we suddenly this is what can happen in music as well. Suddenly things can just turn on their head and become amazing. You know what I mean? Then you're going to have, this is suddenly happening, you know? So this amazing magic has suddenly happened with Reef. So we're really excited about getting back out there with this new record we've done, man. So
wonderful.
That'll all take shape, you know? We have to wait for the opportunities to sort of, you know, things just to get better again. Like, we're just, what we're talking about with COVID and stuff, we just have to wait for all that to sort of sort itself out. That's looking cool, man. Reef's looking cool, you know?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Jack, I'll tag the new album and the video in the bio to this so people can go and check it out and listen. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk records with you.
Yeah, thanks, Stuart. Me too, man. I've really enjoyed that. And it's great to look you in the eye, mate, when we're doing it.
Mate,
and stuff, man. It's made it really cool, actually. So I'm so happy we've done this, man. So thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
Lots of love to everyone out there.
Absolute
Absolute
pleasure. Have a lovely weekend, Jack. There you go. I now want to be called Stu Whiffin Rocker. I love it. I love being called Rocker. Never been called Rocker before. And when I first spoke to Jack on the phone, he was like, "All right, Rocker." And I thought, oh, I'm having that. I'm liking that, Rocker. I hope you had as much fun listening to that as I did recording it. What a top fella. And we carried on chatting long after we pressed stop, which is always a sign that a podcast has gone well. Thanks again to Jack for giving up his time to record that. Thanks to you lovely lot for listening and supporting Off The Beaten Track. You can support it in other ways as well. There is a Patreon page if you want to go and sign up over there. That'll give you access to hundreds of other bits and pieces over there. Loads of episodes that have never been released to the masses. And then obviously, as I said at the beginning, go and have a look in the archives, because there's 170 episodes now of great chats with some incredible creative people. So go and have a look over there. Your one-stop shop is offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back soon. Have a lovely week. Look after each other. Be nice. See you soon. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.